going to begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, September 8th, 2014, at 6:30 p.m. Would you please take a moment and review the minutes from the August 25th meeting and let me know if you need your approval?
I'm good.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody good then?
Great.
Okay, then we're going to move on. Really, the majority of this evening's meeting is we have FQC here this evening. They're going to be presenting the bid results from the Forest Glen and Churchill work that we've put more or less on fast track. I do have two items that I'm going to bring you pretty quickly. That is the end of your budget financial review, and I was going to give you a quick update on the state reimbursement for a portion of the Hadley Courtyard. So some good news around that. I started to give this presentation 2 weeks ago, and we ran out of time. I just started to go through the revenues and salaries of whether we were over budget or under budget on those particular expenditures or revenue items. I stated that property taxes came in slightly higher, at $634,000 higher, and that's the difference is the way we budget, because we budget on a cash basis, but we actually receive these items. Well, we receive and recognize them on a cash basis, but the auditors will accrue the appropriate amount of income taxes into the previous year or the following year. Corporate personal property taxes, I never get an actual statement from the state that says, hey, you're going to receive X number of dollars. In general, it fluctuates with the way the economy goes in the state of Illinois. This year, we have lucky we received $133,000 more than what we had received. What we had in budget. The next item is a tuition line item. I believe I put a little write up in here. We only received $74,006 on a cash basis, but I had sent out bills the last, I'm going to say the very first week of May, and the agreement amongst my finance managers were we were all going to get the bills before June 15th, and we would pay the bills before June 15th. Well, that didn't happen with some of my fellow business managers. And so in July, we received several hundred thousand dollars, which would still have exceeded the $289,000 that we were budgeted. And a lot of that, previously we had two programs in the district. Now we house three programs in the district. Field trips and bus fees, we budgeted $30,000. It came in at $38,000. Interest earnings, as I've told you over the past several years, interest earnings is still an issue and probably will remain an issue because of historically low interest rates. And I made an adjustment, a significant adjustment, as we roll into this year's budget. Fees for students, our food services, we were over budgeted significantly, and I cut that back down dramatically when we moved into the 14-15 budget. This was the first year that we really rolled out the food service program at the elementary level and the breakfast program at Churchill. So a lot of variations there, and we're trying to be a little more consistent in how we approach our estimates. Student fees, we budgeted $402,000. We received $346,000 on an annual basis. Donations, we received $81,000 and budgeted $111,000. What I noticed is that what has really picked up, and it really doesn't show it in this item, but developer donations have picked up quite a bit over the past 6 to 9 months. So I would expect that number to probably exceed what we budgeted originally for this year. Unrestricted state funds is general state aid, and we actually received $1,328,000 versus the $1,002,000 that we had projected. So I upped our expectations for next year for the 14-15 budget. Same thing with the restricted state aid, which are the categorical funds, particularly transportation, special education, a lot of different things in that line item. But they refer to them as categorical funds. Federal funds is another one that I sometimes don't get the final numbers until September, October, several months after we've already begun the budgeting process. And I did throw in, not throw, but I did place in the recognition of the $7 million in loan proceeds from MB Financial. Okay, so that's our revenue expectations. Overall, we came in $635,000 over budget. If you look here, the majority really is it's spread amongst all the accounts, but a lot of it has to do with the receipt of early receipt of personal property property taxes. So we'll move down to revenue. We budgeted 28.9. We budgeted 28.9 in salaries. We always spent 28.4. We budgeted 5.4 million, almost 5.5 million in benefits, and we came in at $5,583,000. So we overspent that account, the majority of which was due to the medical insurance. Purchase services. We budgeted 6.9, and again, these are on an amended basis. So this was the amended budget that you saw in June. And the purchase services came in under budget by $338,000, which we expect to see pretty bills coming through now. It mostly has to do with construction. Supplies and materials, we underspent by $319,000. Capital outlay was within a couple thousand dollars of the estimates. Dues and fees, we underspent by $20,000. The principal and interest payments, that's a pretty easy number. We should always be pretty accurate on that, or be accurate on that. And then tuition, I've got some last-minute bills that I paid during May and June. We overspent the tuition account by $440,000. And again, that was a result of tuition payments to other school districts and other special education-related expenses.
Sorry, Bob. Can we push on that a little bit? We spent $440,000 more in tuition than we expected for the fiscal year.
For the fiscal year, and these are programs. These kids come in and out of programs all year long, so it's pretty difficult to come up with a solid number that we have a lot of belief in.
Is this the first time that you've been 20% off? I mean, because other stuff, you're striking at 1%, 2%. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, I can't answer that right off the top of my head.
Right. But those are costs that kind of outside of our control because of the kids and the programs that they're...
You answered it beautifully. I mean, that's the great unknown. Who comes in, who doesn't, what are some of the costs? And some of the costs, as you've seen these bills, are significant costs, especially for some individual kids. It is very, very expensive at times.
Bob, I know you talked about the tuition piece on the revenue, on the expense side. Same thing on the tuition side, on the revenue side. Is that the same thing? You're having a hard time budgeting
down? No. I have good numbers on that. The problem is that my fellow business managers, when we had a meeting in late May, early June, we all agreed, all right, let's get our bills in by June 10th to the other districts, and everybody pay their bills by June 30th so that we have a better looking number than that. I'm probably the only one. Got my bills out on time, and also paid our bills on time.
So we'll receive this.
We already have, as I mentioned. In July and August, we've already received like $300,000+, and you'll see it at our next finance meeting. You'll have an updated number in terms of what we received to date in regards to tuition coming into the district. And I think in that July August period, we received in excess of $300,000.
Okay. So if we were on a accrual as opposed to a base on a cash basis, you'd see it.
You will see it when the auditor.
Okay.
When the audit reports come in November, you'll see that number larger than the $74,000 that we recognize now.
That's why this one at times is a little misleading because the November one. Is the actual one. It's right. The one where the auditors have gone through it. They have all the numbers put in place.
That's when we have our audited financial statements, our comprehensive annual financial report, and everything will be presented at that time.
charge.
You've got to give us bankers a minute or two to go for like
next.
Right, we gotta, it's hard for us to switch back and forth. Yeah. You know? We like accrual.
On accrual basis.
So, that's all I have for this evening's discussion on the actual versus budget expenditures. I also wanted to update you. About five years ago, when we were planning the Hadley Courtyard, Sandy Pijos came to us and asked us if we had any capital projects that we would be interested in getting some assistance from the state. About that time is when the economy fell apart, and we applied for the grant, never received it. We're told that we weren't going to receive it just because of the state of the economy in the state of Illinois. Lo and behold, 2 weeks ago, Paul gets a call or an email from the state says, what do you want us to do with this money? So they are now processing a $45,000 reimbursement to the district. I've got the paperwork. It's probably, knowing the state, it's probably a couple days worth of work, so I'm trying to get through with that, file all the documents, and then sometime we're going to expect a $45,000 reimbursement from the Hadley Courtyard. You're sitting there with stunned silence. You can't believe it.
Yes, it's a beautiful state. But, okay, so how do you get a reimbursement of $45,000 if we're on a cash accounting basis?
How do I just recognize the receipt of revenue when it comes in?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All we're going to do is you can't offset the depreciation or the accrual of that asset. So you're just going to get $45,000 in.
And it'll go under miscellaneous revenue.
Okay.
So in the business world, that would mean that income would go directly to the bottom line.
Right. So here, you're going to have $45,000 of cash to place in what?
Miscellaneous revenue is where I'll put it. Donations, miscellaneous revenue.
Does it go into a specific
fund? Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Is it going into the education fund? Okay, that's all I have for you this evening. We have Jack and Fred from FQC here this evening for their presentation on the bid results, and then I'm sure any other questions that we may have. I know that Jack is due to give a construction update, but if we have some time, I'm sure you'd be happy to answer any additional questions you may have.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay,
thanks
for having us back. As Bob said, Fred Morano is here. I want to make sure he's here because he does all the work that leads to these recommendations. So, give you the big picture. This is for the work at Churchill and Forest Glen buildings. We went out for bid as you authorized us to. We accelerated the schedule for these two projects, and so we're working to try to advance the schedule for both of these facilities. We went out with about 20. Well, we went out with 20 bid packages. Not about. We did 20 bid packages, and the total value of the work of those packages was just under $4.4 million. And all told, the packages came in about $136,000 under budget of that $4.4 million. What we're here to talk about tonight, what's in your package, is the recommendation for 16 of those 20 packages. Since the bids came in on the 22nd of August, Fred and our team have been able to meet with these 16 contractors, scope them out, work through any challenges that have been presented, and have made a recommendation for the lowest responsive bidder in each category. And in general, the lowest recommended contractor is the lowest as-read contractor. We have two exceptions to that, I think, is two.
Yeah.
Midwest Wrecking, which is item number one in the report, was the low as-read bidder, but in their scope review, it became clear that they didn't have...
Right.
You might recall in the last time you went through this, the landscaper did the same kind of thing. We submitted a bid, but we didn't include everything, so we had to go with the second bidder. So in the case of the demolition, we met with Robinette, the second bidder. They had everything, and that's the contractor being recommended.
Just a clarification.
Sure.
And I know you said this before, but just to clarify, if I'm the first bidder and my bid isn't per the qualifications. Do I get a chance to do it again, or is it just disregarded?
You have to basically accept the criteria of the documents. So if you made a mistake,
you're out.
And you decide either you need it or you're asked to be recalled.
They have the opportunity to accept the as-read price, but they have to deliver the scope.
Right.
Or they can request, according to the documents, the way we prepare them, they can request to be withdrawn, have their bid withdrawn without any penalty, subject to your approval. And that's what we're recommending.
But the other thing is, I don't get to say, I didn't dot that I, let me dot that I. Add that allowance in this case.
No, not when it comes to that.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You know, if they forget to recognize receipt of an addenda, and their addenda doesn't really impact their work, that's an irregularity we working together with the district would either choose to accept or not accept. But when it comes to pricing and scope, those areas are, we don't feel those are good areas to negotiate with.
Thank you.
So the other one that was had a bit of an irregularity was item 4 in the letter, which is bid package 2-05 structural and miscellaneous steel. The low as-read bidder was Corsetti. However, Corsetti is not an AISC, which is an industry certification. They are not an AISC shop, which was required by the bidding documents. So while we met with them and they did have the scope, they don't provide the level of industry certification for the work. So we met with K&K as the second as-read bidder. They are an AISC certified shop, and they do have a total scope of work, so they're the recommended low responsible and responsive bidder. And really, that's kind of where we stand. We're moving forward, and I'll just leave the rest to questions if you have any.
So my understanding is Corsetti sent an appeal, or
they sent a letter to us with the intention of appealing, and Fred spoke with them on a couple of different. We passed it on to Bob and Ron to let them know this may be coming, and then Fred spoke with them.
Yeah, I mean, he understands that he didn't have AISC certification. He was hoping that it would be overlooked and just, you know, gone that way. I mean, he's a good contractor, no questions about that.
Yeah.
But the criteria is the criteria. So the criteria was asked at the time of bidding by other contractors as well if this could be waived, and it came back that no AISCs must remain in the documents. That was during addendum number 1, so like after the first week of documents being out for bid. And he didn't say anything at that time.
Did some bidders withdraw because they weren't there?
Some bidders did, yes. So you know, he had the opportunity to do so, or he could have put up another fight to try to get it reversed, but it was just quiet. And then he bid it his way.
And what's your understanding now as far as his position?
He said, well, they're not going to change. I mean, he's, you know, he'd love to have the job, but he says they're not going to make big ways on it. So
it's our understanding that he's kind of gotten over the frustration of the AISC versus non-AISC. And while he wrote the letter, he kind of set it in draft form to us. We passed it on just to let you know what's going on. But we don't expect him to contest the award.
I have a question for him, because this, the letter is one thing, but to me, as a buyer of these contracts, that's what we're doing, it begs a question. Right? What there's a value to having that,
yes,
and there's a cost to having it, at least there appears to be.
There is.
So can we have a full explanation for that, Ron? Are you created these bidding packages along with? So, to me, there are certain reasons to have these certifications. In the industry, sometimes you have to have certifications for BOMA and other things, and you guys know it better than I do. So, what are we buying here?
Well, we didn't. I couldn't tell you what the cost of that premium is because it's a steel certification program.
We
can tease that out.
Yeah, I'm not asking the cost, because the cost shows up on the spreadsheet pretty well. if you just want to take it.
Yeah, the difference is there. So
yeah, but
what could
I think
what Joe's question is what is the AISC?
Yeah, what do you get for that certificate?
That's my question.
It's a certification program it's a common denominator among steel fabricators as some level of assurance that they're conforming with the industry standards. So if they don't comply with that, then you would know as an owner that they comply with this framework of steel fabrication. And so, you know, if it wasn't Corsetti, if it was some other steel fabricator from Wisconsin or Indiana, then and you didn't have that in place, then you would be, if they're the qualified low bidder, you'd take that steel fabricator. So
it's an insurance policy that they're fabricating it to certain specifications.
Industry standards.
Right. And erecting.
It's actually
and erecting.
Yes. Outfit audits their shop to make sure that they're using everything.
So it gives me a comfort that when we're comparing apples to apples.
Correct.
And what has been our practice in the past regarding steel erection and fabrication?
Well, we came across this with the first round too, and we stayed with the certification, which is the default position. I mean, we typically include that in all of our specifications. It's not an anomaly for Glen Ellyn. If you run into budget issues or for some reason you don't think you need it, maybe the project's smaller, then you can wait. But it should be consistent from bidder to bidder. We would have to do that.
That's not my question.
Yeah.
Joe, we've had, from time to time over the past several years, we've had these irregularities or these contractors come back to us after the bids have been processed.
I don't want to get off track.
Okay, yeah,
let's stay focused. All I want to know is the value.
Do you believe there's value in their certificate?
And my last question specifically was, what is our common practice as a district? We built buildings. The question was answered, the last two buildings, which are going on right now, it was required.
That's standard we're working under on this program.
Hopefully you understand where I'm going with that.
Yes.
We
are trying to remain as consistent through this process to what has happened, what is happening, what's going to happen.
Gotcha. That's to make sure we're fully disclosing what everything sounds like and what we're buying for this dollar.
And you believe in the certificate. That's an important aspect of what you do.
It's a standard of care both in the shop and in the erection of the steel that this industry provides to these contractors. So, you know, it would have been very difficult for us to justify not using the certification given that we've already required it and are implementing it on programs today.
Yeah.
Well said.
Thank you.
Go ahead. The certification, is that more prevalent in Illinois? Is it a national program?
It's a national program.
It's a national program. Okay.
It's a common practice in our industry.
And the only reason we wouldn't have that is it's a cost.
There's a cost associated with it.
But also in the private sector, if you had this invitation only, if you knew the bidder and knew the quality of the product, then you might consider waiving that requirement.
Right.
In the private sector.
Okay.
So I have one last general question for you. It's my same one when I end up with only one bidder.
Yep.
You know, and this, by default, you end up with one bidder on this. And now I can probably see why you're probably ending up with one bidder, because when we request the certification, we're taking the pool of steel manufacturers and erectors and shrinking it.
Yep.
So as long as you feel comfortable, that's why you're here. It's not my job.
He's a local contractor as well.
But for all the ones that have one left, I think that makes maybe three of them out of
the Yeah, there's that. There's the Howell Doors, which is LaForce.
Yeah.
You know, they have the job already.
Their numbers consistent,
and it's hard for it's hard for the other two or three providers to look at it and go, how am I going to beat LaForce when we're in the district? So there's some of that. The one I'm surprised about is the earthwork at Churchill. I don't understand how we got.
We figured that the other contractor would have bid as well.
Yeah, Essington's on site.
And we had quite a few guys saying they weren't bidding.
Yeah, you know,
they bid. They don't turn it in. It's nothing you can do.
Are you finding in the industry right now, in the marketplace, I guess I should say, that these subs are a lot busier than they've been in the past, and as a result, you know, they've already filled up that spring?
Well, yeah, exactly. And because, you know, they all got a little smaller, and now they're getting busier, and everybody's reluctant to staff up. So their cap is limited. Or, you know, it could be a bonding thing. They're just capped out on bonding.
Which are harder to get today than they were.
Right. Yes. So there, I was a little disappointed in earthwork. The other ones. Casework, same argument there. Right?
Yeah, the guys that did it last time said, you know, why bother? Stevens is doing the last one. He knows the system, he knows what he's providing.
I would have felt.
But at the end of the day, when you look at the per unit basis,
right,
you feel comfortable that those guys are providing.
Yeah, they're still competitive in their number.
In their number.
Compared to last time we had multiple bids. So.
Right. And that's a good concern for us.
Yeah. And again, as we're under budget, it makes it a little easier too.
Yeah, well, no. I won't agree with you on that one. I'll agree with you. If you're doing comparative analysis. As long as you're doing comparative analysis on a big unit basis and you feel comfortable making these recommendations when they only have one bid based on the other two buildings that are just built, you should have maybe some small increase in some of the unit bases. I understand that it's out in the marketplace, so we should expect if we don't have it, then we're doing a good job. So,
right.
I appreciate the feedback and the questions.
And there's just put a little teaser out there. There's a few things that Fred picked up during the scope reviews, that working with Ron and the folks at FGM may end up saving us a little bit more money down the road that will go through the normal process with Bob I. So the overall project is in, across all four schools, is in real solid shape in terms of the.
Well, we picked up those the last time we met. We were back a few days, rain, weather.
Yeah,
we've
picked up a few days schedule-wise. We're going to have to spend a little bit of money on Saturdays and maybe extended days here and there to make sure that we have the assurance, you know, the comfort level that we're going to meet the schedule. So we've picked up some, but we're probably going to have to force the schedule in a couple areas. But overall, you know, it's in good shape.
If we could, that was Bob, you had offered that up if we had time to talk about their summary.
We have time.
That's the point. And I guess then your write-up talk about there's a, if you call it premium hours, which you just described at the end of the weekend, and we have a line item in our budget that already has some of that available to us.
Yes, we planned for and set aside an allowance for the work at Franklin and Lincoln because of, you know, the schedule that we knew we were going to be on and the potential for weather impacts on the overall program.
So my question comes, it seems that your budget's off 8 to 10 days, depending where
I'm at. We're probably down to around 6 now.
From when you wrote this, right?
Yeah.
At that pace, we won't be using
it. Well, you know, actually, that was where we were hoping to be. The last two reports, we've indicated we were hoping to pick it up, you know, just based on schedule compression and so forth. But, you know, it's the beginning of September. We really want it to be wrapped up, you know, in December so that we can have a smooth transition to the next school year coming in January. And, you know, with some of the delays at Franklin especially, we probably are going to need to spend a few dollars on premiums.
And then I guess you feel at this point not holding to you and holding you to anything. But we have that budget item we need to pick up. We called 6 to 8 days. We need to get to you.
Yep.
We're going to be within that budget line.
Yes, we won't overspend that budget line.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yep.
Any other questions that FQC or FGM can answer?
Well, Bob, I was wondering about back to that state reimbursement. Is it going to go into the fund that we would have available for some unforeseen circumstances related to these projects?
If we deem it necessary to,
it'll be in that fund bucket, that educational fund bucket that allows us. Okay.
That's not a problem.
Okay.
As long as Jack and Fred are here, I'd like to. I always
look
at that.
What?
No, I don't want to get done early. No, it goes to the two questions. One is now that school's in full session, this is kind of the first time we've been there since.
Yep.
How are your activities going with the children, with the students, and the teachers and full staff?
You mean, are they working?
No, I just is it yeah, working for everybody? Is it?
It's working. The last 2 weeks, I've specifically asked that question at our coordination meetings on Monday's afternoon, and we haven't heard any substantive pushback or concerns. We had a little bit of coordination the first couple of days in Churchill with buses and trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So we've stationed somebody there during those hours to make sure we don't run into that issue.
And your subs parking far enough away and all that?
Yeah, we talked about that today too. I'm sensitive to that at Lincoln as we, you know, we're at a little bit of a, you know, as construction schedules go, you can blast away, then you got to do a sequence activity that kind of slows everybody else down, and then you can blast away. Well, right now we're in a little bit of a lull at Lincoln because we have to get some of the underground plumbing done and out of the way before the mason can keep running.
Right.
So that's where we're at right now, and I'm sensitive to being back in school and the mason coming back with, you know, six or eight guys, and all of a sudden cars all over the place and trucks all over the place. So we talked about that today for Lincoln, but we haven't had any of the principals report back to us any problems or concerns at this point with school being in full swing.
I get down into the weeds. I was thinking about this mason and doing fine Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
See where stage is. Has anybody ever thought about centralizing parking and then, you know, six of them getting into somebody's big truck and just parking one truck near?
Yeah, we actually have asked and put in the documents for them to park one or two blocks west of
okay.
the school for that. If we really get into a bind with that,
okay.
you know, instead of just mm-hmm. running up right. whatever that street is that runs along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, instead of just running up that whole street, which is already a narrow street,
right.
I think Lambert is two blocks west and
yeah.
it's a wider street.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah,
okay.
we've talked about that.
And then my last segue into how things are going. In our goal still at Forest Glen in Churchill is to get as much as we can get done before the weather turns.
Yep.
And that includes foundations?
At a minimum.
We're
trying, we talked, John and Fred and I talked about that today. And at Churchill, we want to get the site up to grade at a minimum there. And if we can get foundations in there, then we will. And that's probably as far as we can go at Churchill. At Forest Glen, we're ready to dig foundations right now. So we could get foundations in, do some underground plumbing, do masonry repair, and probably steel and roof duct, and then stop.
And
that's the best case scenario.
Given the recent history and weather in Chicago, I mean, last year the frost line was lower than ever really was.
I don't know ever, but at least recent, my history of this industry.
What do you feel precautions that we should take in that regard?
Basically, our building pads for both Forest Glen and Churchill are granular material. So, and they're going to be pretty deep and granular because it was bad ground there. It was removed and replaced with stone. So that's going to help. It won't move. It won't freeze. It's hard to pad.
Right.
So that helps with regards to frost damage.
Gotcha. So we're okay for so frost is not an issue.
And the thing with the masonry and Forest Glen, we'll have to make a decision if we're going to do masonry. We have to feel comfortable that we can do masonry through steel roof. That's going to be the decision point. We know we can get the foundations in.
I got a quick question, and it's, I'll say, inside information, because my wife's on the PTO. And I told her to follow the protocol to make sure they speak to Kirk Samples first and go through you, Paul.
Yeah.
But I said I would broach it, and
But what they're looking to do is, Mike, if you hold it, that picture right there, they want to, from a PTA, all right, or that one, they, from a PTA perspective, they want to possibly go out to Ben Franklin families and say, hey, buy a brick for something, and your name or your family's name will go there, and it can be part of the facade or something like that. And I said, well, you should have been thinking about this in the springtime, because those red bricks are going up in the next month, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're already. If you actually go through to one other picture, I think you'll see that's Lincoln. That's Lincoln.
Well, Patrick, I was thinking, you know, when I was over there at Patrick Kirk, he had talked about reworking that labyrinth plaza.
Okay.
And that curved retaining wall, that would be the perfect spot for a memorial brick.
Yeah, something like, yeah. Is that what it's called? Yeah.
That might be a little bit more prominent.
Okay.
But that would be contingent on doing something over there.
Okay.
So I don't know how, but his timeline.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad to hear about him. But that other picture at Franklin, you can see kind of in the background that this wall here is a new wall that already has the red brick on it.
Yeah, I drove by last night and I saw it and I pointed out to her. I was like, look, this stuff's already going on.
Yeah, some sort of flat surface plaza area adjacent to that retaining wall. You know, is an appropriate location for something like that, but it's part of the building.
I'm going to need you to call my wife and tell her.
We got to drift her. Okay, thanks. Oh, yeah, the last thing, in case it got lost in the shuffle here. So we opened 20 bid packages. We're recommending 16 because that's where we got to. So we have four more that we'll have to come back to you. They're not scheduled critical, so you know it's not a problem from our standpoint. But just so you know, we've got the bids. We've got to come back to you, and you'll hear another round of this for those four. And
next meeting.
Yeah, we'll probably try to talk about it. I'll put it on the agenda just so you know that we're getting it taken care of.
Any other questions?
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. I think Finance Committee is done early.